the LAN, rather to the backbone, to DAS, to provide the video services. Section 7 is the ADMW portion of Senate Bill 622. The first year, calendar year 2000, $11.9 million was budgeted. $11.9 million has been dispersed. On the next page, there are a couple of highlights I'd like to highlight, and then I'll turn it over to Tom. To date, just to give you a status of where we are on the implementation, 85 video conferences nodes are installed. 245 schools and ESDs have initiated an application with us, so that means that there are approximately only 40 that have not yet applied, and we will go out and get around to them. We're implementing about 15 to 20 a month, and that's why we're not too worried about the last 40. We have plenty to do between now and the end of the year. With that, I will turn it over to Tom Cook to talk about some of the other experiences we've had.
Thank you, David.
Implementing the bill.
Thank you, David. And again, for the record, Tom Cook, Director of Oregon Public Education Network. David referred to the one segment that was allocated to OPEN as a part of the bill, and those funds were to assist K-12 in the state in in funding internet access. In the K-12 network, we have an estimated 120,000 workstations or computers across the state, and the bandwidth requirements to support this is growing immensely. We're adding 3 to 6 megabits of capacity per month to support the type of applications that are beginning to be used in the classrooms, and this money was allocated to continue to pay for that. We're estimating that in our next fiscal year, the internet access bill will be somewhere in the excess of $800,000 for K-12 alone, and it will continue to grow. So those funds that were allocated here were to take care of that. In my remarks, the handout that I've provided to you, we have, in fact, accomplished a tremendous amount in the last 14 months. And as I'm looking back now, I'm thinking that it was probably in our own best interest that we didn't have money allocated to do a lot of studying and implementation. We just went forward and did it. And we've run into some challenges because of that, but it may have been in our own best interest. And I've listed these as challenges and accomplishments. First of all, one of the challenges is that not all of the areas of Oregon have yet been connected. We still do have some delays. We still do have some areas that have extended relief dates on those. But I must say that with the working partnership that we have with the carriers in the state, that they are doing everything possible to make this happen. And we're working with the community, working those schools, with the carriers to improve that. With over 600 new orders of T1s, well, it's one of the accomplishments in this time frame. Many of the providers were able to cost justify or accelerate their upgrades in some of those regions that might have ended up being on the other side of 622 as a part of the community process that Sherry was referring to earlier. So we have seen a tremendous amount input from the K-12 component to assist the community development in these areas. Another challenge has been from our school districts that even though we indicated to them in the very beginning that 622 funding was a two-year allocation, there are still now concerns about the fact that we have all of this out there, that in January of 2002 they in fact will be faced with budgeting for all of those services. The accomplishment on this in that we've had this growth is that, again, 91 additional schools are now connected that we didn't have before, and we've seen some equity in making that happen. So they have the bandwidth, they have the connectivity, they have the same level of access to resources, educational resources, as anyone in the state. Again, I've already mentioned the bandwidth growth, and we're not sitting idle watching this grow without taking every opportunity to maximize the use of our resource and minimize the cost, and we're doing that through several things. One, setting up with our partners such as the Higher Education State of Oregon, hierarchical caching, which reduces bandwidth use, more application toward the state intranet, keeping as much of our traffic within the state with our partners rather than going outside, and developing additional strategies on minimizing other impacts. Another challenge has been, and the one you're probably hearing about the most, is the concern about the ongoing cost of video conferencing capability. 622 required that we connect each of those points in the high schools and the ESDs into a state backbone, state network. And there were very valid reasons for doing this. One, we across the state now have settled on a standard platform so that we have compatibility between state agencies and K-12, higher education, et cetera. And we're looking forward to to being able to use the existing state backbone in some of those cases. Not all of that has come to fruition, however, as far as the growth of the statewide network and us being able to begin to utilize that. So we do have, in fact, a situation where the fee that is charged to each site for the connectivity is such that school districts are not sure they're going to be able to afford that. So in preparation for that, we're doing several things. One, there's a review of the existing fee structure between the Department of Education and the Department of Administrative Services to see if there's any possible relief there. Two, we're working with the state on trying to maximize the application of E-rate for all components of the video network and try to get additional resources in from the federal E-rate program, which would reduce those monthly costs. Thirdly, we're looking at network efficiency designs, looking at regional network host or aggregation sites, and looking to see with the engineering staffs if, in fact, that will reduce the overall cost by having fewer individual circuits running all the way back to Salem. So we're working on those kinds of things to try to get that cost down to what the schools would consider to be a more affordable rate. Are we going to be able to accomplish that with what I just listed? Probably not. Are we going to be coming to you for some additional support? Probably so. We're not prepared with the actual numbers on that yet, but we will soon be ready to do that. Another challenge that we have encountered with the video conferencing distance education is that we have found limited content, curriculum, teacher training, and support. And these are areas that we had not envisioned as being red flags or barriers originally. As a result of that, we have created a K-20 coordination group, and they are across the three sectors of education, K-20, now starting to address all of those kinds of issues that we're faced with. Higher education community colleges have a lot of content that could be appropriate for our K-12 system. We want to make sure that we have a process and a mechanism for getting that there. We're creating some of the content within our own system, within the schools, but there are a lot of other issues that we're facing. One is a governance structure, another is sustainability. Higher education, for example, in preparing their offerings of courses, need to be able to advertise those for not just for 1 year, year to year, but they've got students have to know that they're going to be there over a longer course of time. We're not yet positioned with this K-12 network, with EdNet going away, which has been a great part of their delivery system, to be able to give them that comfort zone that it's all there and in place. Again, another challenge, uncertainty about how to make the best use of this. The Department of Education formed a distance education council. We're working on the policies, the procedures, and looking at how SimCam can be delivered over this network and into the classroom. I've already mentioned the fact that EdNet goes away at the end of this fiscal year, and that the higher education community needs a replacement system. The accomplishment out of all this, of course, is that we have been forced to really work collaboratively together in looking for those other kinds of solutions. The second page that you have is more of just a list of some of the successes that we've...
Tom, I'm just wondering, and I hate to do it, but I'm going to have to sort of move on. But the Senate Bill 622 success stories somehow or other do need to be into the record someplace along the line, so we can be sure to get that in, because I think that it's remarkable what you have accomplished, and we do want to get that on the record someplace. Is there any one thing you'd like to say before I...
Two things.
Tom's always done this.
I know you only gave me one. I need two.
Okay, Tom.
First of all, the very first point on here, we've put together a network where people were really unsure of how they were going to use it. In this short period of time, we've had over 1,500 video conference sessions scheduled. Those are classroom to classroom. They are professional development and training opportunities. They are meetings. The legislature itself is using this network now. And you can go down through some of these. And in fact, Mr. Chairman, one of the points in here, we even have one school district that now has decided on a common bell schedule.
That's now your second point, right?
No, that's not. The last one is that, the last point I'll make about, and it relates to video conferencing, is that Oregon absolutely needs to have a distance education strategy. We in K-20 are working very aggressively at trying to develop such a vision and a strategy. It is very important to all three of the sectors, and as I mentioned, for the state, there is no governance structure about how this will work. There is no strategy on sustainability and how they will collaborate and cooperate together. Or how it might be staffed. The scheduling coordination is probably the most critical element of that whole network and environment. And I could go on and...
Okay, Tom, I think your point's well taken.
But I wanted to make that point, yeah, that distance education in this state is really
probably
critical.
Should get that on the record, and maybe for some of the time to discuss it and to see where we fit in with the Education Committee and our committee. But make a note of that and see if we work something on it. And by the way, I do note that, if you recall, Senator Courtney's been concerned about hearing from young people and their thinking on technology, because they think differently than my generation does. It's kind of like Senator Atkinson and I certainly are on different wavelengths. But the idea is to bring...
I'm not sure how to take that.
But to hear from young people, and I think we've been working with Tom, and I think maybe that we're going to do the teleconferencing. We may involve students from all over the state in dealing with the issue you talked about. Okay, Tom, thank you very much. Okay. Appreciate that. I'm going to call Phil Nygaard from PUC. I'm running over a little bit here, but and Dan, I would like to, Dan Stark, I do want to give you just a minute, if I can, to go ahead.
Chair Duncan, members of the committee, I am Phil Nygaard, the administrator of the Telecommunications Division at the PUC, substituting for Commissioner Smith, who's ill today. I sense quickly that the Universal Service Fund is not really where the action is this afternoon, so I'm going to attempt to give you the one-minute overview. Senate Bill 622 did require the Commission to establish a state universal service fund. A universal service fund is designed to see to it that all citizens have access to basic telecommunications service, or telephone service is a better way to put it, at affordable rates. It's been a term that's been used in federal law for over 60 years. We were to achieve that goal by September 1st of last year. We have achieved it. You probably have noticed that there's a surcharge on your bill starting about last September. That's the way it's being funded. There's a surcharge being applied to all retail telecommunications services. It's an obligation of the carriers, but they do have the option of passing it on to their customers, which is what they're doing. We expect over the 2001 to 2003 biennium that we will pay out close to $243 million in funds. Initially, all these funds will be going to support the high-cost areas of Qwest and Verizon. The reason for that is because we're waiting for the Federal Communications Commission to complete its work involving the smaller carriers. Once that's done, we have 6 months under the law to complete our work so that all carriers serving high-cost areas will receive funds. That's my 1 minute over. If you have questions, I believe you have copies of the testimony. If you have questions, I'd be happy to answer those. Otherwise, I'm finished.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate that, Phil. Dan, I know you had a comment you wanted to make. Would you? It says if I have time, but I'm going to squeak.
I'll be very brief.
Squeak. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dan Stark, I'm the director of the Regional Services Institute at Eastern Oregon University, and I'm also principal staff for the Eastern Oregon Telecommunications Consortium. Consortium is a nonprofit organization with membership spread over 11 counties. It's government, education, health, nonprofits, private sector, ISPs, telecommunications companies, and the objective of EOTC is to make sure that telecommunications is built out in Eastern Oregon to benefit all the residents of the region. I just want to quickly say that I've been in this process for about 4.5 years, ever since I came to Eastern and started to tutor under Terry Edelson. And I've been to all the meetings in the last few months, and I'm still confused over what's going on with the 622 process. And I think of myself as a relatively intelligent person. At the last meeting, we heard that the five rings are now going to be give priority. That's the intent of the bill. We have no problem with that, except that we do not have a guarantee that the seven projects approved in the first round are going to be honored. And the process was set up under the rules developed by the department. People put together applications. We worked in the field with a number of the communities. It took meetings. It took a lot of time. Put those applications together, submit them under the rules, have them scored under the rules, and then brought to the board and then to the commission and be approved. And approval does include getting the final contracts done and costs done. So in essence, what's happened here is the department and the connecting board have gotten out ahead of themselves. They got into round two before they had finished pricing out and completing round one. And on top of that, they made the assumption that they had to do something to fix the process because they can't fund all the projects in round two. Our position is that there's only so much money. Finish round one, price it out, come back, take a look at your priorities in round two, go down the list, and when you run out of money, you run out of money. And there's only so much to hand out. We are very concerned that we're going to get back into rulemaking, shuffling around, and that projects are going to fall through the cracks. And as Senator Farioli has said, people are nervous out there. So we see the process is working towards getting what we need, the rings built out, the electronics installed so that local communities can be connected. We are concerned about how it's getting there. And it's creating a lot of concern.
Do you plan to attend the meeting on March 8th?
I will be at the meeting on March 8th.
Okay. I guess, I don't want to speak for the committee. I guess I would like to hear a report, or I would like to hear from Sherry and the people from the Economic Development after that meeting, too. But I'd like to hear from you to see if, when you walked away from that meeting, did you have some answers to your question? I realize that the official meeting and action wouldn't be until April sometime, and there could be some lapse time. But I guess that meeting, as I understand, is to listen and to be an informative meeting. Is that correct? Yes. That's the purpose of that meeting?
Mr. Chairman, Pat McLarney, Oregon Economic Community Development Department. The purpose of the meeting on the 8th is for the board to figure out how they are going to go and meet face-to-face in all the appropriate communities so that folks like Dan and his constituents can be there and talk about all the issues that they see and make suggestions and guidance and all the other things that go into that so that we can do what the commission ordered us to do, which is get back to the communities and take a look at the situation we have and come up with a solution that meets everybody's needs. So the purpose of the 8th is for the board to say, okay, these are the things we've got to do. Now we're going to go out in such and such community Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, whatever they say, and notify everybody. And that's where the real work gets done, sir.
But as I understand also, this Dan and people like Dan will have a lot of input into that meeting.
Exactly, because part of what's going to happen, sir, is we're going to be examining what exactly did the commission tell everybody at that time to make sure we all know what they said so that when we start doing what we believe they told us to do, that that is in fact what everybody understands is the right thing to do.
I guess,
want to make sure nobody misses out on what it is we're up to.
Committee, correct me if I'm misinterpreting something, but my interpretation right now of the concerns that we're hearing and this committee is hearing, we want to be assured that there are going to be some answers and that people are, there's concern about the credibility of 622 right now. We want to, by the April meeting, no later than April meeting, we hope that those things have been resolved. Now, I recognize you're not, you always can't make everyone happy, and that's not, but at least there should be some assurance that people know the direction and have had a chance for input. Other committee members want to say anything? You've worked on, Senator Metzger, you've worked on this committee a lot, too. Any comments?
I think you're right on. I think there's your points were good in terms of where the direction of people wanting to go. You're not going to, you're not everybody's going to be happy.
No, you can't.
We need to have a general sense of confidence in the system and the process and that into what those things are. And to the extent that there obviously are some issues, I think it would be good while we're in session to make sure that process, that confidence in the process is there.
We will want someone back to this committee after that April meeting. Senator Atkinson, any comment?
No, I am here for a quorum, and I'm just taking care of my conflict.
Okay.
You're doing well
right now.
I'd like to point out again, though, that we've gone through a process, and 7 projects were approved through the Economic Development Commission.
I think, Dan, you've been very clear.
And public releases were made on that, and people are building grant proposals and other projects based on those approvals. And if we're going to go backtrack and start to reshuffle our opinions on those projects, we're getting into a nice gray area, and it's going to cause a lot more concern than just what happened in the last month.
I have a feeling that group will hear that on March 8th from you,
yes,
too.
Thank you. I'd like to make one thing real quick.
Yes.
In the letter that was circulated, and I would appreciate if the chairman would put this into the record, Senator Atkinson's name, spell check made it Senator Alexander, and I know Jason Alexander is a very competent actor.
He's just here for the forum anyhow, so let me say
that he's no Senator Atkinson.
It doesn't make any difference.
And I wish to apologize for that. Thank you. We'll be back.
All right. Thank you very much. We appreciate. I think this has been it's been a good hearing for us. We recognize a lot of good things have happened. Sounds like a lot of miscommunication. Sounds like people need to get their act together. And we've been assured that by the time we meet with you folks later in April, it will be resolved. Okay. I'm going to close the informational meeting on Senate Bill 622, and I want to thank all the participants in that particular part of it. Now I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 11. Do we have any? Senate Bill 11. David, right, you are back up. And Tom, why don't you come together, okay?
Jason Alexander.
I can't do those together, can I?
No, that hurts.
Good afternoon. I was trying to hurry you along so I'd have time for you.
We appreciate that. Senator Duncan, members of the committee, my name is David Reich, Director of Technology, Department of Education. With me today is Tom Cook, Director of Open Project. Senate Bill 11 is a technical adjustment to Senate Bill 622. What we're trying to do is overcome a couple of oversights that were done when the bill originally passed. Quite simply, there's a conflict between the fiscal year and the school year and the calendar year. When you put those three together, it creates some problems in the actual administration of the bill. We're not here to talk about any additional funding or any funding problems that we're having. What we are trying to do is account for, first of all, we're asking for some limitation because the last half of the bill for calendar year 2001 is actually in the next biennium, and there was no limitation put in the budget for us to spend funds in the next biennium, and clearly we will have expenditures since we are making payments for the $5,400 a month for video equipment and video line costs in an ongoing sense, so we need to have the capability to make those payments in the first 6 months of the next biennium. Then also, because of the calendar year, again, there were only enough money for a certain number of months of connectivity on the video side, so we did not start the buying the video VTEL equipment and then installing it right at the get-go, because there weren't enough money in the bill to pay for a number of months to install everybody right at the beginning, even with a ramp-up. So we delayed that installation, starting that until June. But what that meant was the bill allocated the funds exactly equally, 50% for 2000, 50% for 2001, when actually we were spending one-fourth of the money in 2000 and three-fourths of the money in 2001. So we were just asking for that technical adjustment to allow us to pay out the same amount of money, just at a different calendar rate.
Okay.
The third thing, then, which the bill asks to do is allow the department to grant waivers for small school districts that would prefer to have a 56K connection instead of a T1 connection, as the bill requires in all cases. The reason for this is we have some school districts out there that have 5, 6 kids, 10 kids, 50 kids, and having a T1 line is more than they'll need, particularly after Senate Bill 622 runs out. They will not be able to afford it without 622 funds. So what they want to do is to have the flexibility to order a smaller line now, and then when they realize they will have to pay for it or find some means of paying for it after the beginning of the next year, 2002.
Are most of these in Harney County?
Yes, that's correct. Thank you. The department will scrutinize every one of those waivers very closely, because the department has taken 622 and made it part of our overall planning process, and we will use the infrastructure put up by 622 for distance education, for electronic assessments, and for all of our electronic communications with districts. So we will scrutinize very closely the granting of those waivers.
Thank you, David.
Tom? Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Tom Cook, Director of the Oregon Public Education Network, and just for the record, I am here in support of Senate Bill 11 and the adjustments that have been requested.
Questions for Tom or David? Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 11. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 11.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 11 to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Metzger moves that Senate Bill 11 be sent to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Senator Metzger.
Just one point, as I was saying to Senator Nelson, I have to admonish the witnesses, we were very disappointed at the assertion that we made any mistakes in Senate Bill 622 last session. But you know, we're not going to take that personal, and we will correct whatever flaws that they thought, you know, were inherent in that system.
Well, it was sent to a wrong committee last time, and they probably did make mistakes, but this committee will correct it. Any other discussion? Any objection? Senate Bill 11 will be sent to the referred to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Closing the work session on Senate Bill 11, opening a work session or public hearing on Senate Bill 479. Do I have testimony?
I'm sorry.
Okay. Can some of you come together? Terry, Dan, Kathy, are you all? You're going to drop out? Okay. He's had his day in court, he's figuring. Okay.
Right. We're tag-teaming this, Senator.
Terry and Kath, would you like to identify yourselves, please?
Chairman Duncan, committee members, my name is Terry Edvilson. I'm a retired faculty member from Eastern Oregon University who was part of the group that brought 622 to the floor, and we know of mistakes in 622, but we're probably part of the problem. The Senate Bill 479, in effect, is brought to you to extend the work began with Senate Bill 622. It deals with the middle mile and last mile connections, and it encourages investment by the smaller companies, we hope. We've targeted companies like CenturyTel and the smaller telephone companies with this bill, trying to bring them to the table to make investments through tax incentives. And we hope it will be successful. You heard about the big rings being put out in the regions of the rural regions of the state, and we believe that will happen. We believe the problems will be resolved and things will go forward quickly.
All right, David, okay. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill.
Chairman Duncan, committee members, my name is Terry Edvilson. I'm a retired faculty member from Eastern Oregon University who was part of the group that brought 622 to the floor, and we know of mistakes in 622, but we're probably part of the problem. The Senate Bill 479, in effect, is brought to you to extend the work began with Senate Bill 622. It deals with the middle mile and last mile connections, and it encourages investment by the smaller companies, we hope. We've targeted companies like CenturyTel and the smaller telephone companies with this bill, trying to bring them to the table to make investments through tax incentives. And we hope it will be successful. You heard about the big rings being put out in the regions of the rural regions of the state, and we believe that will happen. We believe the problems will be resolved and things will go forward quickly. But we also understand that capital investment is risky in the rural areas and hard-to-serve populations. And what we're trying to do is encourage investment sooner. CenturyTel, the other companies, are working very hard and cooperated in the 622 process, trying to couple their investments to the investments that 622 has caused Quest to make. But we don't believe it's enough, and we don't believe it's fast enough. And so we're asking you to consider a significant public policy, actually spending decision, because when effectively you pass a tax credit, you pass a spending bill. In this case, it's to develop rural telecommunications infrastructure and for services into the underserved urban areas. We can't give you a cost projection for this bill for one reason. Nobody knows the impact of information dollars and how to calculate their return, information technology dollars, and how to calculate the returns. I have talked with the Department of Revenue, and we believe that 15 companies maximum would probably take advantage of this opportunity to participate in the tax credit bill, because there are costs associated with participating. You have to file an application with the Department of Economic Development. It has to be approved, and you have to meet certain service requirements. So from that perspective, we think there's a small number of companies. We don't believe every company in the state would choose to participate, but we've left it open in the bill. We believe there are essentially two public policy discussions that you need to have above and beyond should we do it at all. One is, should there be a cap on the amount, on the annual amount of tax credits allowed? The amendment number one, which we would suggest not be included in the bill, puts a $10 million cap. And if we want to encourage investment, then let's not put a cap on it. But if because of revenue projections you feel it's necessary, then we would encourage you to do it. It's the decision that we believe you need to make, and we leave that on the table. The other issue of how could you limit the exposure of the state in the tax credit area is by limiting the number of companies that could participate by the size of the company, focusing it on the smaller companies. We would encourage this not to happen as well, simply because Quest, Verizon, the larger companies have a lot of service areas in rural communities where this may cause them to make investments again. So we see those two as particular decisions that need to be made on Senate Bill 479, in addition to whether we should do it at all. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Why don't we go to you right now, Kathy Britton, if you have any comments to add to what he said.
I would like to add my support to this bill. I worked very closely with a lot of, excuse me, for the record, my name is Kathy Britton, I direct RodeoNet. I worked with a lot of the communities to develop telecommunications plans, and sitting at the table with the providers who were at the table with the communities, I watched a lot of struggling go on about how they were going to solve those middle mile and last mile problems. And communities are energized to find those solutions. I think the small companies are energized to find those solutions, but there simply is too much investment risk for us to push companies to get involved without some incentive. I just want to illustrate real quickly what this might mean in terms of an application, and I'm involved in healthcare, and so I'm going to use that as an application example. We look at small rural communities as having three legs that they stand on. They stand on their healthcare, they stand on their education, and they stand on their economic development. I think rapidly telecommunications is being infused into all of those. I know it's being heavily infused into healthcare. And one of the things that we're dealing with is the fact that Congress has passed security and privacy guidelines that are going to govern all of our information about the patients that we serve. If we do not have the appropriate connections and the appropriate bandwidth to do that, many of our small rural clinics and rural hospitals are going to fold. That's simply where it's at. If you lose one of those community legs, you lose the community. And I think that there are probably similar stories for education and for economic development. But I do think that this is a problem that's going to face us very quickly as these guidelines come into place for health care. And I would urge your support of this bill. Thank you.
Questions for either Cindy or Terry? Okay, no questions at this particular point.
Thank you.
Okay. Are any of you together? Let's see, Bill Weinman?
No, take
it with me. Okay, come on up then. Okay, if you want to be antisocial, that's okay. It's up to you.
two sheets.
Okay. Good afternoon, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senators. Terry Edvilson asked me if I would come and testify for this bill, and I wanted to come and tell you more about CenturyTel, and after that, I don't want to be perceived as a company that's groveling at the public trough. So I would like to tell you a little bit about our company, and that's why I brought these two charts along. As you can see, we serve about 80,000 customers throughout the state. We own almost all of Eastern Oregon, and we're proud of the service that we give. I like to think that we are kind of the Nordstroms of telecommunications. We're very high cost, but we deliver the service to our customers. Our company is the first system company to provide all digital central office switching in the state of Oregon. We're into significant rebuilds in terms of providing fiber communications. All of our offices, from the central office out, is all digital communications, some by fiber, some by digital microwave, and others by digital copper. So with that, if you have questions on the first, as far as the smallness of our company, the largest area we serve is Lebanon, Oregon, that little purple spot, and we have about 15,000 customers there. We have two other exchanges that are between the 5 and 10,000 capacity, and after that, we drop off in a hurry to 1,000 lines and under. And we have many lines that are 200 lines and under in some of our exchanges, and our smallest is Starkey with 46 customers. If I could direct you to the second chart, and I'll just keep this short in terms of the support. We do believe in deploying technology to our smaller exchanges, and this chart shows what will be in place in terms of DSL capability to our customer base by probably about by the end of June. The west side of the state, Lebanon, Aurora, Scappoose, Glen Eden Beach, and down in the Creswell, Eugene area, have DSL up and running now for our customer base. The east side is currently being constructed. So to the extent that the Oregon legislative body would want to offer tax incentives, certainly it would help us deploy capital faster. I mean, our capital is a scarce resource like anybody else. Generally, we deploy anywhere from $10 to $15 million a year in capital to give better customer service to our customer base. And so that's my five-minute pitch. If you want to talk to me about Senate Bill 622 or anything else, I'd be more than happy to tell you CenturyTel's position on it. Since it was mentioned earlier, I believe, about Lakeview and facility issues there. And with that.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for, is it Weinman?
Yeah, no. Bill Weinman.
Weinman. Okay, thank you. No, appreciate getting this. Okay. Thank you. Okay, Commissioner, Cindy, where are you? There you are, Cindy Willer. And Ben, do you want to come up at the same time? Bill, well, I don't know why I said Ben. I know. David, with you by any chance, or is he?
David was going to be here, but apparently he had another thing to go to.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill Penhollow. With the Association of Oregon Counties, and with me today is Lane County Commissioner Cindy Wheeldryer. Commissioner Wheeldryer is the chair of our Communications, Public Outreach, and Education Committee, and is also the chair of our Telecommunications Priority Team, which is working on telecommunications as one of the county's top six priorities for the 2001 session. Commissioner Wheeldryer will be presenting our testimony, and kind of in the consideration of time, we've put both issues together in one written statement, but may also want to reserve the opportunity to come back on 8:33 if there are a couple of issues that remain unaddressed that we feel need to be addressed.
Okay.
So with that, Mr. Chair, let me turn this to Commissioner Wheeldryer, and she will present our testimony.
Okay. Cindy, is there a chance you could kind of just brief your testimony a little bit?
I do have to
quit at 3 o'clock because I have people of other committees, and so.
We're going to combine both our testimony here on these two bills, and that's the reason I'm appearing before you today. Both of these bills are very important to counties, and it's our telecommunication priority, as Bill just mentioned. And Oregon is poised to build on the accomplishments that have already occurred, particularly most recently with Senate Bill 622. We want to ensure that all Oregonians benefit from the state's investment, and that we have additional innovative funding strategies that we need to put in place to see that the middle mile and the last mile of telecommunications infrastructure is built out, and that can be accomplished in a timely fashion. Both Senate Bill 479 and Senate Bill 833 provide just such tools for state and local governments to use to ensure that high-speed broadband telecommunications facilities reach every part of our great state. The Association of Oregon Counties is here today asking for a approval of these two bills and to have a due pass recommendation. And as it was distributed to you, we've also attached for you our priority on telecommunications for this session. I accommodated you, Senator Duncan, and I made my remarks brief, and thank you for your support.
Okay. Questions for Cindy or Bill?
Mr. Chair, just the difference. One is establishes tax credit, and the other one issues revenue bonds. Is that really basically the difference in the two bills? And it's all part of your strategy for economic development. And
they're just tools in our toolbox that communities have available to them if these pass, that they don't currently today.
Oh, there is an amendment to it. Do you have any comment on the amendment?
Mr. Chair, we have not seen the amendment.
Okay, so it's the one that has the $10 million limitation.
Okay, the cap?
We're in support of the cap. That was our recommendation.
All right. Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on 479. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 479. Senator Nelson.
I would move the Dash 1 amendments to 479.
Senator Nelson moves the Dash 1 amendments. Is there any discussion? Hearing none. Any opposition? They're adopted. Okay.
I would move Senate Bill 479 as amended to the, well, with the subject of referral to revenue.
Revenue.
With a due pass recommendation.
Senator Nelson moves 479 as amended to revenue with a due pass recommendation.
Chair?
Yes, Senator Nestor.
I'll be voting no on this, and I think everyone knows the committee is a strong supporter of rural development and communications, but I'm not voting for any tax credits at this point. As you know, our revenue forecast is down $113 million. This carries at a potential $20 million fiscal for the biennium, which would restore project independence. It would pay for the tuition losses we're having colleges. So until I think we go further down the line and see whether we might tap some additional revenues, I just want to let you know I'm supportive of this, but we have programs we've cut that we need to know what is in full view. And if, in fact, some of those revenue sources come back on the table, then I might be able to change and support this on the floor.
I might explain. I'm going to vote for it. It's going to go to revenue, and I think revenue will look at the big picture down there. So I share some of your same concerns. I think I'll – any other discussion? I'm going to ask for a roll call vote.
Aye. No.
Aye.
Aye. Having received a majority vote, we'll send it to.
My vote reflects the fact that I think we should spend all the tobacco settlement money as opposed to have to go to the trust fund.
Senator Courtney wants it so noted. Okay. Senate Bill 479 will be sent to revenue with the recommendation of due pass. Okay. Yes. You want to vote on?
These three got to think about.
Yes. No. We have one more.
Well, go ahead. Then I guess we do.
Yes, we have a. We only have a public hearing on the next one. Do you want to open? Senator Courtney would like to reopen the on Senate Bill 11, the work session, for the purpose of allowing him to vote on this one. Senator Courtney, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Senator Courtney votes aye on Senate Bill 11, closing the work session on Senate Bill 11, opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 833. Do we have people to testify? Okay. Looks like Terry. And as you folks,
as quickly as I can, sir.
Very briefly. Okay.
First of all, I'm not used to be Terry Edwelson, Eastern Oregon Telecommunications Consortium, LeGrand, Oregon. We have brought Senate Bill 833 to the table to try and put another funding mechanism in place, revenue bonds, that would allow small communities, small companies to get together to expand telecommunications services in the rural areas where, in fact, the business case is not easily made. I would use an example that's not directly related, but the city of Klamath Falls has sold revenue bonds to build a cogeneration facility that is now being operated by Pacific Power, or will be, is being built and operated by Pacific Power, but still owned by the city. In this case, we would envision several scenarios. One, a small community cannot get services from its carriers that it feels it needs. It could use the revenue bonds to, in fact, buy out a carrier. It could use the revenue bonds to partner with the carrier to buy equipment and switches and services that the carrier doesn't believe it can make, and charge and recover revenues through the use of that equipment, just as the city of Klamath Falls is getting will get revenues back through the sale of power. As with Senate Bill 622, we're not sure how this will work. We left this very loosely structured so that the Department of Economic and Community Development, during the rulemaking process, could help define, and during this process, by the way, could help define what the parameters would be for using these revenue bonds. They're much more experienced at it than we are. In Section 5, there's one issue that has been raised. And the way we develop these is we put up our ideas, and then we ask people to comment on them, and then we put every other idea that is received into what we ask be drafted. And in this case, Section 5, it's line 16, a public body may own an eligible project. However, a public body may not operate the eligible project. Given the controversy swirling around House Bill 2680, we would suggest that this be struck, that it was not the intent to preclude a public body, in effect, from operating a system, especially when a community cannot get the services it feels it needs and is willing to take the steps to move forward. And so we would ask that in an amendment to this bill that be struck.
Okay. Anything else, Terry?
Nope.
Okay. Questions? Thank you. I'm going to go to Brant Wolf, even though, Cindy, I know you're over 100 miles, but I want to hear the opposition to this first right here, since he's signed up opposed to it. Good afternoon.
Thank you. Chairman Duncan, members of the committee, my name is Brant Wolf. I represent the Oregon Telecommunications Association. The OTA is opposed to Senate Bill 833 as currently written for exactly what Mr. Edelson just testified to. We thought there was some ambiguity and some vagueness in this bill regarding public bodies and non-public bodies and how they would operate and own these eligible projects. And we'd like to see that cleared up. We have some philosophical concerns in regard to this bill as well, which I won't read from. You have my testimony. You can see what
that is.
Is
there a chance that you folks could get together afterwards and try to work on some of these things and come back to us with some recommendations?
Chairman Duncan, I'm sure that I'll be talking to Terry, yes.
Okay, we'll let you do that then. Okay,
certainly.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the brevity.
Any questions at all? I'd be happy to answer
questions.
Any questions
right now? Okay, we're going to let you guys work it
Thank
out
you.
A little bit. Cindy and Bill. I think she left you, huh?
Mr. Chair, for the record, Bill Penhollow with the Association of Oregon Counties. Commissioner Wheeldryer had to step out to take a conference call on a cell phone. So I would like to indicate to the committee that we support 833, as we indicated earlier in the testimony. We also support the amendment that was suggested by Mr. Edelson, and we'll be happy to sit down and see if we can't work these details out.
Good. We'd like to have you work with them.
Yes, it's extremely important that local governments, in particular counties, have the ability to invest in these underserved and unserved areas in our rural communities to make sure that we get the broadband out to all of Oregon. So we're very, very concerned about this, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you.
We'll do what we can to get back to you with an amendment that will be acceptable, so we can move this bill off.
I want to involve David if he's around someplace, too.
I will.
Okay, thank you. We'll let you folks work it out, and we'll look forward to seeing you back.
Chair, can I just ask one?
Yes, Senator Nelson.
Bill, how do you resolve the public versus private issue that we have in here? In 10 seconds.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, as we have talked before, there are going to be circumstances where counties may need to be providers of last resort to get the services out to some of the most remote communities. And if that's what it takes, we feel that the law should be written to allow that. We don't want to get into the business, but it may be necessary to do so to enable a company to eventually come in and take over the service and provide it for that community.
Mr. Chair, just follow up on, and we were happened to be in Ashland last week and looked at their citywide network. They actually formed a private, a private company that went out on the market. But the city was the owner and the private company was subsidiary. How do you resolve that? I mean, they're basically in the business, but they went out and borrowed the money by themselves and they're paying it back. Is that a compatible thing, or is that in conflict with this whole concept?
Are you familiar with the Ashland situation?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, I am somewhat, but I would prefer to have my colleague from the cities respond to that question, because I'm not familiar enough with the situation really to make an informed comment on that. Thank you.
Okay. Other questions? Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing then on Senate Bill 833. Nothing else to come before the group today. Thank you. My goodness, six live. We are right on schedule.
You're just
afternoon. Meeting is adjourned.